ॐज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्याज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जायमुदीरयेत्। We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter, text number 12. Tachchadana mudayo jnana vairagya yuktaya paschantyatmani chatmanam bhaktya shutagrhitaya. Translation: the seriously inquisitive student or sage, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes that absolute truth by rendering devotional service in terms of what he has heard from the Vedanta Shruti. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. The absolute truth is realized in full by the process of devotional service to the Lord Vasudev, or the Personality of Godhead, who is the full-fledged absolute truth. Brahman is his transcendental bodily effulgence, and Paramatma is his partial representation. As such, Brahman or Paramatma realization of the absolute truth is but a partial realization. There are four different types of human beings: the karmis, the jnanis, the yogis, and the devotees. The karmis are materialistic, whereas the other three are transcendental. The first class transcendentalists are the devotees who have realized the Supreme Person. The second class transcendentalists are those who have partially realized the plenary portion of the Absolute Person. And the third class transcendentalists are those who have barely realized the spiritual focus of the Absolute Person. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, in other Vedic literatures, the Supreme Person is realized by devotional service, which is backed by full knowledge and detachment from material association. We have already discussed the point that devotional service is followed by knowledge and detachment from material association. As Brahman and Paramatma realization are imperfect realizations of the Absolute Truth, so means of realizing Brahman and Paramatma, that is, the paths of jnana and yoga, are also imperfect means of realizing the Absolute Truth. Devotional service, which is based on the foreground of full knowledge combined with detachment from material association, and which is fixed by the oral reception of the Vedanta Shruti, is the only perfect method by which the seriously inquisitive student can realize the Absolute Truth. I'm going to read that sentence again. Devotional service, which is based on the foreground of full knowledge combined with detachment from material association, and which is fixed by the oral reception of the Vedanta Shruti, is the only perfect method by which the seriously inquisitive student can realize the Absolute Truth. Devotional service is not, therefore, meant for the less intelligent class of transcendentalists. There are three classes of devotees, namely first, second, and third class. The third class devotees, or the neophytes, who have no knowledge and are not detached from material association, but who are simply attracted by the preliminary process of worshiping the deity in the temple, are called material devotees. Material devotees are more attached to material benefit than transcendental profit. Therefore, one has to make definite progress from the position of material devotional service to the second class devotional position. What does one have to do? What does one have to do? I'll read it again. Besides running out of the room, here's what you have to do. Therefore, one has to make definite progress. What kind of progress? Definite progress. From the position of material devotional service to the second class devotional. Or he actually says to the second class devotional position. So what does he have to do? from materialistic devotional service to the second class position of devotional service. You have to make definite progress. In the second class position, the devotee can see four principles in the devotional line, namely the personality of Godhead, his devotees, the ignorant, and the envious. One has to raise himself at least to the stage of a second class devotee and thus become eligible to know the absolute truth. A third class devotee, therefore, has to receive the instructions of devotional service from the authoritative sources of Bhagavata. The number one Bhagavata is the established personality of devotee, and the other Bhagavatam is the message of Godhead. The third class devotee, therefore, has to go to the personality of devotee in order to learn the instructions of devotional service. Such a personality of devotee is not a professional man who earns his livelihood by the business of Bhagavatam. Such a devotee must be a representative of Shukadeva Goswami, like Suta Goswami, and must preach the cult of devotional service for the all-around benefit of all people. The all-around benefit of all people. A neophyte devotee has very little taste for hearing from the authorities. Such a neophyte devotee makes a show of hearing from the professional man to satisfy his senses. This sort of hearing and chanting has spoiled the whole thing. So one should be very careful about the faulty process. The holy messages of Godhead as inculcated in the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam are undoubtedly transcendental subjects, but even though they are so, such transcendental matters are not to be received from the professional man, who spoils them as the serpent spoils milk simply by the touch of his tongue. A sincere devotee must therefore be prepared to hear the Vedic literatures like the Upanishads, Vedanta, and other literatures left by the previous authorities or Goswamis for the benefit of his progress. What do you have to do? Do you have a second microphone? Better bring it out, because I use that stuff. I'll use the second mic a lot. Say it again. What do you have to do? Okay.
Hear the scriptures from the authorities.
Okay. As a sincere devotee must therefore be prepared to hear the Vedic literatures like the Upanishads, Vedanta, and other literatures left by the previous authorities or Goswamis for the benefit of his progress. Be prepared to hear. Without hearing such literatures, one cannot make actual progress. And without hearing and following the instructions, the show of devotional service becomes worthless and therefore a sort of disturbance in the path of devotional service. Unless, therefore, devotional service is established on the principles of Shruti, Smriti, Purana, and Pancharatra authorities, the make-show of devotional service should at once be rejected. And an unauthorized devotee should never be recognized as a pure devotee. By assimilation of such messages from the Vedic literatures, one can see the all-pervading, localized aspect of the personality of Godhead within his own self constantly. Again, by assimilation of such messages from the Vedic literatures, one can see the all-pervading, localized aspect of the personality of Godhead within his own self constantly. I have a question for you. What do you have to do to see the all-pervading, localized aspect, all-pervading localized aspect of the personality of God within yourself from this side of the room? What do you have to do? If you don't say it in the microphone, it doesn't count.
We have to hear from the authorized devotees.
You have to? Assimilate. Yes. Assimilate. What does that mean, assimilate? What is assimilation?
I don't know.
You better look it up on your iPhone.
I don't know.
There's a dictionary on that phone. Look it up. What? Bring it within. Okay. Still look it up, though. Use your dictionary. This is called samadhi. This is called samadhi. Samadhi. Tashadadhana munayo jnana vairagya yuktaya pashyantya manichatmanam bhakta shuta grihitaya. The seriously inquisitive student or sage, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes that absolute truth by rendering devotional service in terms of what he has heard from the Vedanta Shruti. So, shall we go through the purport just systematically, and then we can discuss at various intervals? Maharaj approves, so I'm going to go ahead. So first, there's a discussion. Srila Prabhupada speaks about the various ways in which the Absolute Truth is realized by various processes. Would you agree that that's the first part? Say yes. Say yes. Say yes. Thank you. So there are various processes to realize the Supreme, and he concludes this first section by saying that some of those processes are insufficient to realize the Absolute Truth, and therefore one does not achieve complete realization of the Absolute by these various processes. Through which processes does one not reach full realization of the Supreme, as mentioned here? Now, one thing is, because this class is actually being broadcast as Prabhupada wrote here, he says, I quote, before you get the microphone, "This is for the all-around good of all people." That means people on the internet. People on the internet are people too, you know. And they can't hear you unless you speak into the microphone, and they get really irritated when they see somebody's lips moving and they can't hear. Go right ahead.
Karma yoga, jnana yoga, and I forgot the third one.
He mentioned the process of karma and jnana here, right? Yeah. Yes. And so there's a statement, but yes, Maharaj.
The insufficient for realization of the Absolute Truth are the process of jnana and yoga. Karma kind of fell off the map. It's like that's in another category. But the transcendentalists are in jnanis, yogis, and devotees.
Yes.
So insufficient is karma, jnana, and yoga.
Jnana and yoga. So as Prabhupada says in his purport to the invocation of the Sri Upanishad, that all forms of incompleteness are due to incomplete knowledge of the complete whole. And here he's mentioning that in order to understand the complete whole, one must engage in the complete process, which is devotional service. And he continues to say that devotional service is based on the foreground of full knowledge with detachment from material association, and which is fixed by the oral reception of the Vedanta Shruti. He says, this is the only perfect method by which the seriously inquisitive student can realize the Absolute Truth. He alludes to a previous verse, Avasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayat Yashu Vairagnam Jnanam Chayara Haitukam. That is, by performing devotional service, one naturally acquires knowledge and detachment. And this is, in this verse, mentioned as fortifying agents that keep one steady on the path of devotional service. Because if you don't have knowledge, you don't know what to do. And if you don't have detachment, you can't do it anyway, even if you know. So you have to have both jnana and vairagya. And they come naturally to one who engages in the direct process of devotional service. And he says, as I'll repeat, that the foreground is full knowledge combined with detachment, and that which is fixed in oral reception of the Vedanta Shruti. And then he names that as the perfect method by which the seriously inquisitive student can realize the Absolute Truth. It's actually amazing how the process of hearing works, that the human body is so designed that if one gives oral reception to anything, that he or she will begin to develop in a certain direction. The consciousness will go in that direction. And if one then very specifically hears and deliberately hears the transcendental Vedic scriptures in the association of devotees and hears from realized devotees, then such a person then naturally advances on the path of devotional service. Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter, 1st verse, Krishna says, touch Srinu. How does that verse begin? Mayasakta manaparta yogam yunjan varashaya asamshayam samagramam yatagyasasi touch Srinu. Krishna begins the chapter 7 by saying that by the process of hearing, you'll come to know everything. Jnanam vijnanam, both knowledge, both phenomenal and numinous. What's the next verse? Touch Srinu. Grab a Bhagavad Gita. Or he's got one in his pocket. So this is the mainstay of one's advancing in devotional service, and that is to a submissive oral reception, to listen to the messages of the great sages, especially through the Srimad Bhagavatam. And by doing that, then one naturally makes advancement in devotional service. So, you have it? Go ahead, what is
it? You mean the
second verse?
Gyanam peham savigyanam idam bhakshami asheshata yat gyatva nehabu yonyat gyataviam avashishyate.
Yes, so that completes the thought that by hearing, one comes to know everything. That is, everything of the material world and everything in the spiritual world. As the Sri Shapanishad states, by knowing both, by having knowledge of both matter and spirit, then one can cross over. Vidyam cha vidyam chayas tad vedo bayam saha avidyayam ritum tirtva vidyayam ritum ashnute. Only one who can know the process of knowledge and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. And Krishna says, by hearing, one can be aware and full knowledge of knowledge that is both phenomenal and numinous. And it's remarkable also through the hearing process that one can come directly in touch with Krishna, because Krishna is the same as the vibration. And if one sincerely listens to the Srimad Bhagavatam as an example, then it's indicated in many places that Krishna then helps the person to advance in devotional service. A couple, I promised a few places. So one place I can think of is in the second chapter, a second verse of the first chapter of the Bhagavatam, beginning with Dharma Prochita Kai Tavotra Paramo Nirmat Saranam Satam Vejam Vastavam Vastu Shivanam Tapa Trayamulanam Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kem Vaprayar Ishvara Sadyo Hridyavarudyate Tra Kritibit Ashushu Shibish Takshanat. So sadyo hridyavarudyate means that when one listens to the Bhagavatam, then Krishna won't leave your heart. He stays there. Of course, he's already there within the heart, but he becomes fully manifest and he won't leave, because the transcendental vibration of the Bhagavatam is his internal potency. He's attracted to it. And not only that, in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, second chapter, last verse, it is mentioned that as soon as one hears from the Bhagavatam, Krishna feels indebted to that person and then will remain in the person's heart permanently. He'll never leave. And one other corroboration, that is from the second chapter of the Bhagavatam. Shrinvatam swakata Krishna punya shravana kirtana hridyataksto hibadrani vidunoti suritsatam. Lord Sri Krishna, who is the Paramatma, the Supersoul in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has relished his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. It means that Krishna becomes enlivened when somebody applies him or herself to the process of hearing. And even if you don't feel like it, if you pretend like you're interested and you try to hear, then Krishna will also help to enliven you. I've had that experience so many times when the mind says, oh, you don't want to listen to Bhagavad Gita. And then by the force of momentum and good association, somehow or other, I take the Bhagavad Gita out and I start to read. And then I feel full satisfaction, whereas I wouldn't have before. And not only that, my intelligence becomes transcendentalized and I feel enlivened. And I feel reciprocation also. So all this can be achieved by oral reception, which if you think about it, oral reception is a fairly passive activity. You have to actually put yourself in a position so you can hear. And I heard that Prabhupada said that God helps those who help themselves, means helping oneself means putting oneself in front of transcendental sound vibration. And so, amazingly, the human apparatus is set up with these ears and the intelligence is at a certain level so that by hearing the Vedanta scriptures, whose culmination is the Srimad Bhagavatam, one can then, for lack of a better term, piece together the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. One begins to understand it. And then such a person also becomes capable of imparting the same knowledge to others. And this is how the Vedic tradition passes along. Tadvijnanartam sagrum eva bigacchet. Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jignasu shreya utamam. Shabde parita nishnatam brahman yupashramashrayam. The Srimad Bhagavatam says, Tasmad gurum prapadyeta. Therefore, one should approach a guru. And what is the qualification? How does one become qualified? It goes on to say, Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jignasu shreya utamam, says you should inquire from such a person. Shabde pari cha nishnatam brahman yupashramashrayam, says that such a person is sufficiently heard. And Prabhupada puts it like this. He says, this person has taken a dip in the ocean of transcendental knowledge, of Vedic wisdom. And that means hearing. And you'll notice, I mean, at least I've noticed, that people who apply themselves to hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Krishna book, the Nectar of Devotion, and so forth, become knowledgeable. They know how to apply themselves in life in the process of Krishna consciousness. They also begin to acquire good qualities simply by the process of hearing. So this is just a summary of the first section of the purport, and I'll just take a few reflections so far. Anything that you'd like to add to the conversation? Yes. Hold that microphone right up against your chin.
I just really like the point where you said where the more you...
And keep it there.
When you listen to Krishna Katha, Krishna actually stays in your heart. Like, he manifests himself, and then he stays in your heart.
Yes, and if you get me an 11th canto, first part of the 11th canto, I'll recite that verse to you because it'll bring joy to your heart, even more joy than you already have now. I'd ask you what else, but he just took the microphone. What other points do you have? Maharaj has a point.
One of the places I was traveling, somebody asked the following question, responsive to something that you say, that good qualities develop when one becomes absorbed in the process of hearing. So this devotee said, I think there's more needed than just the hearing process and trying to understand and being able to present to others the message, because I know a number of people who are very learned, but they're a little mean-spirited and they don't have such good qualities, so something more is needed besides that. And I'm interested in exploring having within our society a method where that something more is explored and developed. Would you like to respond to that interesting thought?
Thank you. Very helpful. There's always a balance between quality and quantity. In fact, in verses glorifying the holy names, as an example, and one comes to mind, Aho bhata shwa pachato garyanya jiva gre vartate nama tubhyam te pusta paste juhuvu sasna arya brahmanachu nama grananti yete, by Devahuti, who says that even if one says the holy name one time, then such a person becomes is transformed. The prarabdha karma is eradicated, and one becomes fit to perform Vedic sacrifices. In his purport, Prabhupada comments that, of course, such a result depends on the quality of the utterance. And similarly, we're advised that by chanting Hare Krishna, you'll attain all perfection. Nonetheless, we're simultaneously advised to follow to observe 10 offenses, to be wary of them, and to adjust our life in such a way that we don't commit offenses while chanting. For then, the chanting will be successful. So a similar way, we heard about submissive oral reception. That indicates a lifestyle change, submissive oral reception. There are other ways of being receptive. One may be receptive in a mode of collecting knowledge, which is actually forbidden by our acharyas. For instance, Rupa Goswami, and in Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said that one should not become a bookworm and accumulate knowledge for the sake of defeating others in argument. In fact, it's one of the regulative principles of devotional service that one should not be argumentative. And the Goswamis showed that by their example. So the quality of one's hearing, which is submissive oral reception, indicates something greater, like a lifestyle change in the way that one's hearing, and not simply acquiring knowledge. I know that sometimes when people take the Bhakti Shastri, for instance, I've heard complaints that after taking the Bhakti Shastri, some people become insufferable, because then they pull out their Bhakti Shastri and say, no, I won't wash any pots, I'm a Bhakti Shastri now. When we gave out our recent certificates for the students who graduated in Bhakti Shastri in our temple, we added the stipulation that if we hear that they misused the Bhakti Shastri title, and by saying that I'm now entitled to something, for instance, I'm better than everybody else, or all the things that are antithetical to the teachings of Trinadapi Sunichena, then the certificate will be voided. We will take it back. Because there's more than just acquiring knowledge. Just hearing and memorizing is not the method, but actually submissive oral reception means that I'm sincerely trying to surrender to Krishna. Tadvidi pranipatena priprashnena sevaya upadakshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshina. This indicates three qualities in the hearer. That is, pranipat means that I'm coming, and first of all, I'm hearing without any doubt, and I am, well, let's see, I'm not suspicious of the source of the knowledge. I'm surrendering myself there submissively. A pratiprashnena, and I'm asking questions. As Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, absurd inquiries are forbidden. You must be asking sincerely, which means you're asking so that you or others can advance in devotional service. In Japan, one of the new bhaktas, when Prabhupada was there, said, ask Prabhupada in a darshan, have you ever met Indra? And Prabhupada became a little indignant. He said, what difference does it make if I've met Indra or not? How does that help you? He said you should ask questions that help you advance in devotional service. Whether I've met Indra or not doesn't make any difference to you, does it? And then Trivikram Mahana spoke up and he said, Indra would be lucky if he met Prabhupada. But Prabhupada indicated there some hint of an absurd inquiry, or at least an insincere or not a very useful inquiry. So there is a quality to one's hearing and chanting that's necessary for one to actually imbibe the knowledge, which means to drink. Imbibe means to drink. You have to drink it in, and you actually have to have some appetite, which means that you have to be submissive. You really want to advance. Otherwise, it becomes superficial. And that brings us to another section of this purport. It's a good segue because there's a way in which Prabhupada brings out the taboo of hearing from people who are not sincere. They don't have the quality of submission to the process of devotional service or to Krishna. And therefore, he quotes, yes, tell Mahaprabhu. Yes, please.
Kind of moved on here, but I had one point on your last on the last discussion. I think everything you said was excellent, that there are many other impediments on our path, such as offenses, etc., even though we may be hearing chanting and maybe doing it superficially, etc. But I was thinking perhaps one other factor is simply time. On the path, the journey to pure devotional service, we probably, most of us, have started at a fairly low baseline. And it reminded me of the pastime that Narayan Prabhu discusses on one of the memory tapes, where he was with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada is walking back and forth and chanting, and Narayan, who is a very dramatic person, those of us who have seen him or know him, says, Srila Prabhupada, is it possible that even someone like me can become purified someday if I am sincere in chanting and hearing? And Prabhupada continued walking and pacing and chanting. He says, yes, why not? And then he walks a little more, and finally he stops and turns to him and says, but it may take a very long time. So, yeah, I think sometimes we overlook, if we see some fault in devotee, yeah, they're chanting, they seem to be chanting, they seem to be following, but they still have these, you know, material faults, that, you know, we are all in the process and it may take a long time. And we don't know what these people might be like if they weren't chanting and hearing.
Such a nice point, from, you know, point of compassion. In fact, Devahuti asks Lord Kapiladev what to do about this seeming endless involvement with matter. She said, it seems like I am my body and mind. And how will the soul ever become extricated from this situation? And Kapiladev answers by saying one must hear for a long time in the association of devotees. It indicates the length of time. In fact, there's a scientific law, the law of large numbers. And that means it has to do with the number of times that one performs an experiment. The more times that one performs a particular controlled experiment, the likelier or the closer one comes to the actual result. For instance, if you flip a coin, you say, well, flipping a coin is 50-50 chance that you flip it once or twice, or just say it has to be at least twice, to get that result. You may not see it right away, but if you continue, then you'll see it. Do you have a light of the Bhagavat? For $20, I'll give you, if you bring a light of the Bhagavat within 30 seconds, I'll give you $20. Ten, nine, eight. Let me see if I have it. So, such a nice point that the we don't know if somebody's in the process and hearing and chanting. We have to see that good qualities will come naturally. We know that from the scripture, yas yasti bhaktir bhagavatiya kinchana sarvar gunas tatra samasate sura. Thank you. Only I'm not I can only tell by looking at the book, because I forget which one it is, but I can guess, and maybe I'll get lucky. It's a section in the light of the Bhagavat that goes to I hit it first time. This is from Light of the Bhagavad, verse 43, and here's Prabhupada's purport. Devotional service to the Lord never goes in vain. Just at the right moment, the result of one's particular devotional service will come, even if one has no desire for it. The pure devotees do not wish any return from the Lord in exchange for their service. They do not make business exchanges with the Lord, but the Lord, out of his own accord, fulfills all the desires of the devotees. It may appear that a devotee of the Lord is becoming poorer and poorer in terms of material prosperity, but factually he is not. The typical example is the Pandavas. The five brothers headed by King Yudhishthira underwent all sorts of difficulties because of the conspiracy of their cousins, headed by Duryodhana. But in the long run, King Yudhishthira was enthroned by Lord Sri Krishna and his enemies were vanquished. Everybody listening? King Yudhishthira was never disturbed by all the calamities that overcame them, even though Lord Krishna was ever their companion. The Pandavas never prayed to the Lord for anything but his devotional service, and in due time, everything came out in favor of the devotees. A devotee, therefore, should execute his devotional services with full energy, endurance, and confidence. He should perform his scheduled duties, he should be pure in heart, and he should serve in the association with devotees. All six of these items will lead the devotee to the path of success. One should not be discouraged in the discharge of devotional service. Failures may not be detrimental. They may be the pillars of success. One may have good faith in the regulative principles followed by the self-realized souls, and one should not be doubtful of the ultimate result of such devotional service. Rather, one must go on executing his prescribed duties without hesitation. And one should never be influenced by unwanted association. We should not consider going back to Godhead a plaything. We must take it seriously as enjoined in the scriptures. For a strict follower, the result is sure and certain. And when the time is right, the result will come of its own force. I love that sentence. When the time is right, the result will come of its own force. And this, the verse is all about the autumn season when males are impregnating females. And the idea is that once they're impregnated, the offspring's going to come. You have to wait for some time, but the offspring's going to come. And so in a similar way, when one begins the process of devotional service, it's so potent that one way or the other, the result will come. Of course, Vaishnava Paradha can deter one's progress, delay it for a very, very long time. Dhruva Maharaj went to worship God to gain something, but when he actually came in contact with God, he did not want anything from the Lord. The Lord, however, awarded Dhruva Maharaj both benefits, that is, the Lord fulfilled his desires and also gave him eternal salvation. Such are the lessons we learn from the revealed scriptures. The Almighty God awards the results we desire, and therefore we should desire that which is eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge. In devotional service, we should not endeavor for that which is temporary and useless. Thank you very much. And thank you very much. So, just to encapsulate what Rompad Maharaj brought up, and Tamahar Prabhu also commented on, was the quality of chanting. Rompad Maharaj said that there sometimes he gets comments from people who say, what about those who are accumulating knowledge, but then it seems as if they have bad qualities. Maybe they're conceited or mean-spirited. Tamahar Prabhu said, yes, but consider the fact that it takes some time to become purified for the process. My initial comment was that it depends on the quality of one's practice of devotional service, chanting and hearing. Those are important aspects in how much we advance in devotional service. How is everybody so far? Yes.
Thank you, Prabhu. you were going to start to mention about that part of the purport. And I had a question immediately when I heard the purport. I thought, well, it's clear that we're speaking here about the neophytes one have no taste for hearing from authorities, so they hear from a professional reciter, so an insincere reciter of the Bhagavatam. And that's clear in terms of, you know, this Bhagavata Shaptas and that type of thing. But in terms of, in our society of devotees, how does that apply in terms of, you know, one being a neophyte who have no great taste from hearing from authorities, and the person who makes a show, or Rupa Padmaraj was mentioning, and you started to explain like that, if you can.
Yeah, first one has to understand who is an authority. Neophytes, extreme neophytes, have a tendency to not know that, who is an authority, who to hear from. For instance, we meet people all the time who are beginning the path of spiritual life, and they might consider that Krishna is a wonderful person. But the devotees know that he's the wonderful person. Some neophytes think that they can hear from any source and get the same results. I'm talking about beginners. For instance, we have oftentimes gatherings where we invite all the public to come. Through meetup.com, we may put up a statement that we're going to talk about mantra meditation, how to advance spiritually, and people from various backgrounds will show up. And they're neophytes, they're beginning spiritual life, they have some interest, but their quality is that they think of Krishna consciousness or Krishna as one among many processes. Whereas those who begin to advance in devotional service consider this is the process of direct devotional service to Krishna is the process. Yomameva masamudo janati purushottamam sasarva vid bhajatimam sarva bhavina bharata. Krishna says in the Gita 15th chapter that one who knows me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate above all, that person knows everything. And so, first of all, who is an authority? Authority is one who has come to the position of understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And such a person who has that understanding and is representing what he or she has heard from the authoritative scriptures and from those who are firmly fixed in scripture, as I mentioned before, Shabde Paricha Nishnatam, they can also speak authoritatively and give benefit. Prabhupada mentions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that even a neophyte who has firm faith that Krishna and his name are non-different can convert others to Vaishnavas. First of all, one has to understand where the authoritative message comes from, how to receive it properly. And in the course of our teaching Krishna consciousness, we may mingle with different kinds of people. We will, without doubt. However, we never consider that, oh, there are other processes. We're simply there to present Krishna consciousness in strategic ways so that people can understand. When I say there's no other process besides Krishna consciousness, that means the gold standard mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is unmotivated, uninterrupted service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That indicates knowing these three aspects of the Lord. Vedanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yaj gyanamadvayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdite. One who's in full knowledge knows Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. And those who have impartial knowledge may only know Brahman or Paramatma and not Bhagavan. So this is required, and one must also have the proper understanding of Bhagavan, and that is that Jivara Swarupahoy, Krishna Nityadas, we are eternal servants of Krishna. Otherwise, as warned in this purport, Prabhupada is alluding to this verse from Sanatana Goswami, Avaishnava Mukun Girnam Putam Harikatam Ritam Shravanam Naiva Kartavyam Sarpochishta Yata Payaha. That means that if you take the remnants of a snake, say you put out a little milk, and the snake comes along and puts his nose in there and takes some, and then goes away, and then you come and drink the milk, it's contaminated with this poison. So in a similar way, those who have an idea that we're all Krishna, and that by chanting Hare Krishna, we'll become Krishna, or who take the Bhagavatam as a profession, and they're trying to make money, then that person contaminates the hearing process, and we won't have the same result hearing from such a person. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made a diorama in which there was a person in front of a veil, and he was reading a Bhagavatam and teaching it. And then behind the veil, you see that he's there feeding his family and a very worldly person. It was showing a dichotomy between his speeches about Bhagavatam and his actual intention in life. So those have to be aligned in order to have complete transmission. Please ask again if I didn't answer your question. Yeah, he'll take it. I can tell he's not satisfied.
I was also wanted to understand how it's applied to us. I mean, obviously, like many of us hasn't yet moved to the second stage of Madhyama Adhikari. Just by symptoms, I can speak for myself. And you know, you're in the process. So how this part of the purport applies to devotees like myself? In terms of, you know, properly hearing and also not necessarily making a show of hearing like that.
Well, one very simple point is to go deeply within Srila Prabhupada's books and make sure that you've assimilated what's already been given. This is a point that Prabhupada made many years ago when there was an argument of, in India, devotees started to get access to many different kinds of books. And the temple president then forbade it, and then others complained, and there was an idea that Prabhupada had said it was okay, and then some said that he said it wasn't okay. So they asked him on a morning walk. He said, Prabhupada, devotees are getting all these different books from previous acharyas and so forth, and the temple resident has banned us from reading. He said that you said we shouldn't read the books of the previous acharyas. And Prabhupada said, I have said? I have not said. I said you should read the books of the previous acharyas. I said you should first assimilate what you have. And in another purport, he writes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that the main process for advancing in devotional service is chanting Hare Krishna. He says, but I see that my disciples are collecting piles of many austere books. There's a tendency that everyone wants to, not everyone, that some may want to get an inside track, get some knowledge that nobody else has, so that you can say, now I know. But the actual inside track is to go deeply into the information that one's already been given. It was bequeathed to us in a very special way. And no one can go get to the end of the Chaitanya Charitamrita and Srimad Bhagavatam in one lifetime. If you actually go for a PhD in the Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'll be occupied for the rest of your life. It's so deep. Only my mind thinks that I'll go somewhere else. So one of the aspects of this is to, for us, in my opinion, related to our practice and our relationship with Prabhupada and ISKCON and so forth, is to be very careful about assimilating what we already have and not becoming anxious to try to take in so many other things. When they come in a natural way, for instance, the Brihat Bhagavatamrita was compiled by devotees who have fully assimilated what they were already given and have been fully faithful throughout their life. They rendered it in the highest standard as taught by Srila Prabhupada, and it is in, it follows the same line, and therefore one could feel good about going into that. But for the sake of trying to assimilate knowledge and to get an inside track, to try to circumvent the process, so forth, accumulating too much knowledge from various sources is forbidden. So that's one application. Yes. Since you took the trouble to bring this out, I'm going to... not where I thought it was. Here it is. This is an astounding verse that relates to the process of hearing and chanting. Only I give a warning before I read this that it is so astonishing that when you hear this, your spiritual life will never be the same. And you'll feel stimulated to hear and chant constantly after hearing this verse. So if you would not like that to happen, at this point time, I'd like you to cover your ears and divert your attention out the door to see if anybody's doing a thing out there, okay? And I'll let you know when I'm done. Are you ready? Say yes. Okay. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 2, Maharaj Nimi meets the nine Yogendras, and this is text number 55. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is so kind to the conditioned souls that if they call upon Him by speaking His holy name, even unintentionally or unwillingly, the Lord is inclined to destroy innumerable sinful reactions in their hearts. Therefore, when a devotee who has taken shelter of the Lord's lotus feet chants the holy name of Krishna with genuine love, the Supreme Personality of Godhead can never give up the heart of such a devotee. One who has thus captured the Supreme Lord within his heart is to be known as Bhagavat Pradhana, the most exalted devotee of the Lord. What do you think? Give him the microphone, he's going to tell what he thinks.
The more that I hear, and the more that I
what's that?
The more that I hear and apply my mind and soul to Prabhupada's books, the more I feel closer to Krishna.
Okay.
Become purified.
And what did you think of this verse?
Beautiful.
Nityananda Pran. Give us more specifics.
This verse gives a lot of hope to me. As you were reading, I was thinking that in one sense, it seems like there is this force of bhakti that impels or pushes the person. And it says, even if it's unwilling or unintentional, one is pushed. I was thinking in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, Arjuna says, there is another force that pushes me to doing, he says, sinful activity. Atakena prayuktoyam papam charati purusha. So there is some other force that acts as if it is extraneous to him. And here's also, there's the force of bhakti. Then it means it's a matter of disposition and depends on then which force impels us. And although I may have those tendencies still lingering, the force of bhakti is acting by the grace of the spiritual master and the disciplic succession and the Vaishnavas, that I may be standing here unwilling, but yet I'm being carried by this force of bhakti, or by mercy, if you will.
Yes, thank you. That was very helpful. And especially in the context of this verse in the class, by applying oneself to the process of hearing. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Srila Prabhupada makes a very practical statement about the importance of every devotee in the Krishna consciousness movement hearing. And this comes in Madhya Lila 25.278. And the verse is, men become strong and stout by eating sufficient grains. But the devotee who simply eats ordinary grains but does not taste the transcendental pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna gradually becomes weak and falls down from the transcendental position. However, if one drinks but a drop of the nectar of Krishna's pastimes, his body and mind begin to bloom and he begins to laugh, sing, and dance. Purport, all the devotees connected with the Krishna consciousness movement must read all the books that have been translated, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and others. Otherwise, after some time, they will simply eat, sleep, and fall down from their position. Thus, they will miss the opportunity to attain an eternal blissful life of transcendental pleasure. So this is a all-pervading, conclusive statement about the importance of... It gives an opportunity, such an instruction, to fix one's mind on reading all the books. And one point that I repeatedly make is that you have to have a plan to do that. And that means there's numerical strength. This is when chanting, if you see devotees walking around with bead bags and no counter beads, you might think that they're from the CIA or something like that, because they haven't... They're actually imitating. They're not actually counting how many rounds they're chanting. Sometimes people say that. They say about chanting Hare Krishna. They say, oh, I chant all day long. I'm always chanting in my mind. Have you ever heard that? So, yeah, I'm always chanting. But there's actually an injunction that you have to take a vow to chant a certain number of rounds. And here Prabhupada's saying you also have to take a vow to read all of the books. So that may seem very challenging. Someone may say, oh, I don't like to read, or I don't have time to read, or so forth. But there is a way to do it, and that is by making a plan. And one of the plans that one can make is very simply done by dividing up the task into small parts. It's very interesting when you do this, because look at how thin one page is on this book. You see that? I mean, it actually seems impossible because the pages are so thin. How, by just turning one page after another, could I come to the end of this big, thick volume? But it happens. And it's actually enlivening to see that you can get from one point to the next by systematically, every day, applying yourself to hearing at least a little bit. There was a Greek philosopher named Zeno, and he said you can actually never go anywhere. Because before you go from point A to point B, there's always a halfway mark. And there's an infinite number, he argued, of halfway marks between each interim step. So therefore, you can never get from point A to point B. And the mind may trick us to say that, oh, to finish the whole Bhagavatam is impossible because I'll just be waylaid, I'll never get there. But years ago, I became intrigued with the idea of completing Prabhupada's Bhagavatam every year, once a year. So I counted up how many pages are in the Bhagavatam. And then I divided it by the number of days there are in the year. And then I just figured, oh, then I could just do that. And it works. So it's only 41 pages a day of Bhagavatam to complete the whole thing in a year. But you don't have to do it in a year. You could do it in 5 years and just do 8 pages a day. And then you'll complete the whole thing. And in a similar way with all the books, if you make a system so that you go through each one of them and count the number of pages that you read, then you'll finish each one within a certain amount of time. Sometimes I've heard devotees react and say, but isn't this mechanical? And my answer is yes. It doesn't preclude you reading with rapt attention and sincerity when you read your pages. Just as much as when you chant 16 rounds, it doesn't preclude you from paying attention while you chant your 16 rounds either. But the very fact that you have a system to go through and finish within a certain amount of time is very helpful in advancing a devotional service, because it keeps one in touch with the hearing process. Yes, last point.
Vaisheshika Prabhu, on this point, Prabhupada mentioned, you read in the purport, that by reading the books or by reading the literature, one becomes fully knowledgeable. And so the point of reading, but there also is the point of studying and assimilating, you know, deep studying like that. So this it seems that it's two different things. One, you can read, but the other one is read and take notes and think and reread, and it's a complete different thing. What would you say about that?
I say that you should do according to your taste, because it's all good. And Prabhupada mentioned this when he was asked about where he reads from his books and how to read and so forth. He said that it's like a sugar candy. Wherever you taste it, it's sweet. And so some people like to drill down a little more deeply and stay absorbed in one purport for 2 months or something like that and extrapolate from it. Or some people move along at a different pace. Some people read to themselves. Other people read in a group and discuss. And all those and combinations of those are very good. Fact is, Prabhupada said one should discuss thoroughly threadbare all of the different points of philosophy, and then you'll come to assimilate them very clearly. So whatever keeps you going, in other words, if you have a taste for that kind of hearing, then do it. And if you can get absorbed in another way, do that. The main point is to constantly be absorbed in hearing, because without it, one doesn't have the proper basis for advancing in devotional service. That's the point of this verse. Chandria? Especially those who are leading, managing the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, it's important to take time to study the books very carefully and not get carried away, because it's easy to get carried away by management and all the other tasks that one has to do. In fact, when I met Prabhupada in 1973 in San Francisco, I was with the book distribution party, and my temple president introduced me to Prabhupada and said, he's distributing so many books, and the other members of our party are doing this and that. Prabhupada looked at us and he said, you must also read my books. I've not written them for selling only. I've written them for you to read, become pure devotees, and go back to Godhead. So that always has to be there. Yes, Jyotendra. Hold that right to your chin, please.
Yes, Prabhu. I was reading the Krishna Samhita by Bhakti Vinod Thakur, and in the conclusion it says, the progression of clarity depends on the person, not on the subject matter. So it's a give or take. And then to those who are irresolute in purpose, their intelligence is many branched, and to those who are resolute, their aim is one. One thing from the 11th canto that always stands out is, whatever you wish to describe, which is separate in vision from the Lord, simply reacts with different names and forms to agitate the mind as a boat on the water has no resting place.
That's from the first canto. First canto, fifth chapter, Narada Muni to Srila Vyasadeva. But I agree with you, it's an astounding verse.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Such a perfect ending. Thank you very much, Jitendriya. And thanks all of you for sitting here to hear and chant. It's Hare Krishna. Gaur Premanande Haribo.
Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, hey, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman.